Usually, sorry, if you look at the Maxwellian phase probability there, then the normalization depends on E.
This normalization depends on E.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so then that's not the phase space density that you're looking. You're looking at something else because the phase space density looks like this.
Oh, okay. So that constant is a number.
Constant is a number, right? So this is why it's good to talk about phase space density because everything looks very simple. It's just this. In the classical case, it's like this, and in the quantum case, then there would be Bose-Einstein distribution, which is this. This goes in denominator, and there's a plus or minus one.
I think from Saturday when we were doing something like this, the E they use in that normalization constant isn't the same E as the one in the
No.
exponent. It's the average E for the entire system. If like if you want to
Right,
segment
that
that,
could be it.
and then that's just some constant that when you divide the two into one ratio will
Right.
cancel out.
Right. Yes, I mean, if you want to express this in terms of the mean number density of the system, then there would be some average E might come in. But the point is that this is a constant, and if you want, can express this constant in terms of other things like the number density, or I mean, oh, you can call it chemical potential. I mean, this is log of the chemical, or sorry, E to the E. Technically, this would be E to the minus E minus mu divided by KT. And so the mu is just the definition of mu would be related to this normalization, or you can relate it to just number density, assuming that's, well, by doing this integral. But the point is that this is just a constant.
But you agree that when you add the potential term, A is going to be different?
It might be different, but that doesn't matter because all we care about is where this becomes twice as what it is at infinity. At infinity, potential goes to zero. So this is one, you just get B, and it's just B. And at some finite distance, you get this extra factor. And the question is, at what point does this extra factor become two? Right. As I don't this,
Assuming.
right? Doesn't make sense. Okay, good.
Sorry, you're not assuming that after system you just don't see the potential. You're just saying at infinity dot
Goes to
zero.
zero, right? Exactly. Potential goes to zero. And that would be the case for a point for a black hole, right? And remember, here we are ignoring this. In this equation, if I remember correctly, we're ignoring the gravity of the stars. I think in one of, maybe in another one, we don't ignore it. I don't quite remember. I'm not sure whether we ever include the gravity of the stars in this problem. Okay, there's collision effects, right? But the self-gravity of the stars, maybe we
We
don't.
did the title, yeah, we did it for the title of
All right. Okay, there, that's right. Okay, good. Good question. Other questions? So I have to apologize for something. I think I said something I was wrong last time, I believe. So I said that there is no imaginary part to the transverse permittivity. That wasn't true. I don't know where I got it. I somehow wrote it on my notes, but apparently it wasn't correct. So I mean, the same way that you get the imaginary part in the longitudinal part, you get an imaginary part in the transverse part of the permittivity. And the way to do it is you just get my equations. If you just remember the definition of current, which is what we use. So current is J is partial by partial time of polarization, right? Or polarizability, is that what they call it? Forgot. Does anybody remember? So basically, this is a definition of P, if you will. This how much charges shift if there's an external due to presence of external magnetic field. And so in the Fourier space, you get J hat is minus I omega P hat, right? And And then the point is, this J was just minus E for electrons, integral of V, VF, or delta F, V3P. And then you could plug this in terms of, so in Fourier space, so this is just a definition of current. In Fourier space, you could plug this in terms of the electric field. Remember, we did this by inverting the Boltzmann equation, which is, so it's minus E integral of V, and delta F was, in Fourier space, was just another E which comes out here, E hat divided by I k dot V minus omega. And there was a partial F bar by partial P. Yeah. Or in terms of, I can write it in terms of components, if you will. It makes a little bit more sense. So it says just, hello, P hat is, this is the probability in the Fourier space, omega and k. It's just, let's see, minus I and I cancel. You just get minus E squared divided by omega integral of E hat. Let's call it, this is P hat I, E hat I. And then there would be Vj, sorry, this would be hat j, this would be Vj, df bar by dpi divided by k dot v minus omega d3p. And there was also this trick that we had to do, which is we put a minus I lambda here to regularize this, but lambda goes to zero. And that's the same. So this is all you need. This gives you the epsilon, right? The definition of p hat is just epsilon minus 1 times e hat. And I guess there's a divided by 4 pi. So this is the definition of. It is inside the parentheses, right? Mm-hmm. No, I didn't multiply it in this I. I brought this minus I down here, multiply by I, and then that gives me 1. So this is the full expression for epsilon, right? And then from this you can read off, and there is an imaginary part for either for both longitudinal and transverse parts. So just from this, I can read off the expression for epsilon, if you will. So this would be epsilon minus 1 ij, this is the tensor now. It would be just minus 4 pi. Am I doing this right? Right, this is the definition. It's just minus 4 pi E squared over omega. And V is just P. So remember, I also said df by dp as a vector is just proportional to P, because F is just Maxwellian distribution. It's proportional to the e to the minus P squared over 2mt. I guess that's what we had up there. Right. From KT, KBT. So then this just takes a simpler form. Just going to be proportional to the product of P's. So there would be a 1 over ME integral PI, PJ, divided by K dot V minus omega minus I lambda. D3P, and then there is here just df bar by dp as a scalar, as a number, so not as a vector. And I'm missing something to get the dimensions correct. I guess that would be ms squared that I have here. I think that's... Yeah, so let me just get these. No, I guess this, there's a p in the denominator. Yeah, so df by p vector, so just is just df by dp, a scalar, times p vector divided by p, a scalar, absolute value of p. Okay? Because it's a spherically symmetric function. Sorry, but
isn't like, so we have epsilon minus one EI.
Mm-hmm.
So that's rank one thing.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So there's a sum. So this epsilon minus one is a tensor.
Okay.
Operating on a vector gives you another vector. And this is another, this is also a tensor operating on a vector, which just gives you another vector. And the point is that since these are the same vectors, these tensors should be the same. For when it's supposed to be true for all e hats, these are the same. This tensor is the same as this tensor. And from this you get, yeah, so the, these are essentially similar expressions. And from this you can read off both epsilon L and epsilon, epsilon L and epsilon T. And they kind of have kind of similar expressions. They both have imaginary parts. And in fact, in the limit of cold plasma, they're exactly the same. And they both depend on, they're just the cold plasma, cold case, just epsilon minus 1 is just 1 minus omega p squared divided by omega squared, right? But remember, this is what we had before. So they, but then they both have the imaginary part that you can include in the high, in, at the temperature goes up. And if the temperature goes too up, the imaginary part dominates, basically. If the Debye length, if the wavelength becomes kind of smaller than the Debye length, then wave is completely damped, right? Did I write this correctly? Yes, okay. Right, and in fact, you could write both of the, and I have it in my notes, for whatever this lecture is, lecture 17. See lecture 17, lecture note 17, I guess, in class notes or more. So that you can write this as a particular Gaussian integral, basically, both the imaginary part and the real part. And both transverse and longitudinal depend on the same Gaussian integral. Okay. So anyway, so this is the story, and we did discuss the implication of this. At least in the cold case, you get the dispersion measure, which was responsible for what? Dispersion region measure. What was it responsible for? Effective mass. Okay, so that's right. This omega p is effective mass. But then, what can we measure using this? Pulsar signal. It affects pulsar signals. So how does it affect the pulsar signals? Right. Good. Good. Right. So and then the reason it's called dispersion is that if because different frequencies are different speeds, if you have a frequency range, then a pulse would be basically dispersed. It's going to be broader because. Basically, the higher and lower frequencies, you know, and no observation happens at a single frequency. You always have some frequency range. And if you have a sharp pulse, it's going to be dispersed. It's going to be arrive at a elongated, basically, time. And based on how that depends on frequency, you can measure the integral of omega p s squared, which is integral of density along the runoff. So this is how you can measure projected electron density in the interstellar medium. Any questions? So, as I said, we are kind of one lecture behind. Somehow managed to do that. So the next step I was going to do, which I guess that's the next step we're going to do right now, is to do cold plasmas, but in the presence of a magnetic field. Okay, so this is basically what we've done here, or at least a special case of what we've done here. You can do it with the temperature, but it's just going to be more complicated. You already see this is a little bit complicated. It's going to be even more complicated if you do have finite temperature. But at zero temperature, cold plasma, it's going to be a little bit easier to handle. Yes? Sure.
What's the relation between what we're doing here and
gas? Well, we just discussed, I mean, this is an example, right? We just, if you observe pulsars. Right. You're not convinced. Right. Well, right. So let's think about this. I mean, of course, the whole thesis, the whole philosophy of this course is not to do astrophysics directly, but rather discuss physical foundations of astrophysics. And then, I mean, the astrophysical... Yeah, right. But the link is, I mean, is... Right, that's right. That's exactly true. And I mean, we can talk about... right, I mean, I guess there are obviously situations where plasmas are not very important. Like, I mean, you could have planets, for example. But like stars are all made out of plasmas, and interstellar medium is mostly plasmas. There are neutral stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the good representation that, in fact, at least in late times, most of the universe is made out of plasmas. Well, or you could see things in reflection, right? Yeah, like moon and, right. But that's true. So I mean, the large things also get ionized because of the virial, they tend to have large virial temperatures.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. Right. Mass-wise, most of the stuff seem to be in ionized, and I mean that's an excellent question. Why that would be in our understanding of cosmology, and I guess that would be the course that you guys are taking next year or next semester. Next time, right, if you want to take it. What we know is that at some point after redshift 6 or so in cosmology, everything is ionized. It's called reionization. Or sorry, sometime before redshift 6, so it could be between redshift 10 or 6. And we think the reason is that when the stars form, they emit basically ultraviolet photons, and that basically ionizes all the neutral hydrogen in the universe. So that's... Because stars first are ionized, but then they reionize everything, the whole universe. And then and then after that, there isn't enough time. The density of the universe is too low for things to recombine. So they're ionized by the UV photons, but then they remain ionized because basically electrons and protons cannot find each other anymore. So, right. So most of the universe is ionized, and then, right. So a lot of, that's why plasma physics is so important. Now, the next thing we're going to do are magnetic fields, and magnetic fields are also very important because, as we discussed, I guess we didn't discuss it in too much detail, but then all the particles go around magnetic field lines, and basically based on our observations of magnetic fields, and I'm going to discuss how we actually can measure magnetic fields. Magnetic fields are strong enough that particles essentially trap to magnetic field lines. So the Larmor radius, which is the radius of rotation around magnetic field lines, is some small number for cosmologic, for astrophysical magnetic fields of order centimeters to meters for the magnetic fields that we know. So magnetic fields happen to be very, very important. Now, where that come from, that's an open question, and we're going to discuss that in at least I'm going to talk about it in some mention it. But that's another fact. So the facts that we have, most of the universe made out of plasmas, most of the universe is magnetized plasma. Okay. So let's discuss magnetism then. Magnetized cold plasma. So, good. Let me see. I mean, for what I'm talking about, so what is it? So, so for, I mean, of course, it depends on when we talk about, I haven't actually, so let's do this. Let me derive what I want to derive for you, and then we can then go back and see where we ignore temperature and what effect will it have. So, so right, I mean, here we knew what it is, right? Because I did actually wrote down the corrections for you. So for and it's interesting, it does actually make a difference. So for longitudinal, maybe we had omega squared was omega p squared plus something like 3k, what was it, 3kve or 3/2 of kve, k squared ve squared. I think that was it, right? And where this VE is the thermal velocity of electrons. So when you say cold, basically here the idea was that the thermal velocity was less than the, or these corrections was less than, K times VE was less than the plasma frequency. So that was cold here. For transverse, you had, right, so the correction, I guess we had this equation. So I guess I never wrote down the corrections there. So I don't know off the top of my head what the corrections here are. But here you could already see that the price of ignoring this is with terms of order k over omega times Ve. So this should be much less than 1. So that means that the phase velocity should be less than, phase velocity should be much bigger than the thermal velocity of electrons. So this basically meant that the waves couldn't, so wave propagate much faster than the thermal velocity of electrons. So that's and that usually makes sense, right? So the idea is that you have a characteristic timescale in the system, right? So this is the period of the waves, and as long as electrons don't move very much within that characteristic timescale, or the amount they move is much less than the characteristic size of the system, which would be the wavelength, then it doesn't matter. And I think something similar would be what would happen here, except that for magnetized plasma, you have another timescale, and we're going to discuss that. So the other time, the magnetic, the, for magnetized plasma, the other timescale is the Larmor frequency or the rotation frequency around the magnetic field. Okay, good. So for cold plasma, so what we're going to do is just write this equation, and this is essentially analogous of what we did, I think maybe last week, but with magnetic field. I guess I'm missing charge here. So here, okay, now I see what I'm missing. This is not mass, this is charge. I don't know what So this is just Lorentz force for non-relativistic particle. It's electric field, it's the velocity of the particle. And this is just Newton's second law, right? Now we can take this to the Fourier space. And so the idea here is that here I'm ignoring pressure. And this is equivalent, this is the statement of cold plasma, because I mean in this equation, basically these terms are pressure terms because you have finite momenta of electrons. And in the limit that basically temperature goes to zero, this become like F becomes a delta function. Okay. So ignoring pressure means cold plasma. So only thing that moves things around are electric and magnetic fields. So just using this, then, and if you go, and okay, so if you are interested in linear waves, the same thing that we did here, then so what happens is we get assume there is a background magnetic field. So at zeroth order, you have a magnetic field, right? So this B is there at zeroth order of in fluctuations. Let's put it this way. So zeroth order. Electric field, it would be first order. Velocity would be also first order. In amplitude of the wave, right? And again, here the velocity would be first order. So the equation and the Fourier space looks like minus I omega VA equals QA divided by MA times E plus VA divided by C cross B naught. So this equation relates the amplitude of electric field, and these are in the Fourier space now. Right? I can put hats instead if you prefer. These are now in the Fourier space. And so this relates the amplitude of the velocity of the charged particles to the amplitude of electric field, or the amplitude of the Fourier modes of electric field. So it's a similar notation to what we had previously. Right. Okay. And this can be actually inverted. Let me see. Right. So this, you can actually invert this. Is that right? So question is now, can we write V in terms of A? You have to basically, you have a three-dimensional vector, have another three-dimensional vector, and you have some fixed background magnetic field. This is the background magnetic field. And it's a little bit counterintuitive how to do this, but let me write the solution for you, and let's see how, is there an easy way? So the way to do it, I mean, so it would be a 3x3, I mean, linear algebraic equation. You have three, so VAs have three components, but then the point is that this B naught breaks the symmetry. So the way to do it, you can go to a frame where B naught in the Z direction, and you have three equations, three unknowns, and you can solve these are linear equations. And here is a solution. So you get VA is IQA omega divided by MA omega squared minus omega BA squared. So there is E parallel times 1 minus omega BA squared over omega squared plus E perpendicular and there is minus I omega BA divided by omega and I guess what they call E cross. So let's see what these terms are. This looks a little bit suspicious. Right, no, right, good, good. So one thing to notice is that there is no wave number appearing anywhere here. Like here we're talking about longitudinal transfers with respect to the magnetic field, sorry, with respect to the wave number. However, I mean, there is no wave number here, and that's because we are in the limit of cold plasma. So there is no k appearing the same way that was the case here. In this case, when in the fourth plasma, you have an isotropic epsilon minus 1. This case is not isotropic anymore because of the magnetic field. Okay. So E parallel here, so these are components of the magnetic electric field. Or electric, these are, I guess I could put hats here. So these are all in the Fourier space again. So you have an amplitude for electric field, which is a vector. So E parallel is a component along B naught. So it's basically E hat parallel is just E hat dot B naught. Let's see, in the direction of B naught. I guess there's a square in the denominator. So all this is that it just takes the component. This is a vector component of electric field. This is in the direction of the magnetic field. E perpendicular is the rest of the magnetic field, basically. So do I have an expression for it? It looks a little bit. No, no, it's a vector, right? So it's just a vector. So
the unit vector.
Right. So it's not a unit vector. No. So sorry. Yeah. I guess in my convention here, the hats, I think everywhere. Yeah. The hats are just Fourier space. That's the only difference between. So it means that whatever your quantity is in real space is a function of x and t here. But it's the exact. This becomes a function of omega and k. So you go to the Fourier space. This is function of omega and k. And the relationship is just a Fourier transform, right?
And
B
was
not
Fourier transform?
Which one?
B naught.
B naught is a constant. Yeah. B naught is just constant. Right? Well, no, this guy is not a constant. So this equation, as I said, this term is first order because this guy is first order. This is just a constant. You can think of it as a constant coefficient of this variable field. Okay. So I guess E perpendicular is just, I guess this is about E hat minus E hat parallel. Right. And then E cross is, E hat cross is just E hat perpendicular cross B naught divided by B. Right. Don't know why I have a square there. I guess I shouldn't have a square. So the picture is just this. I should have started on this one. Okay. So if you have an electric field, or this is your E hat, and this is your magnetic field. Let me see. Or let me use another color. So this is your magnetic field, B naught. So E hat has two components, right? There is a component in this direction. Oh, I was going to use this other one. E hat parallel. There is a component perpendicular. This is E hat perpendicular. And then the E hat cross is just E hat perpendicular but 90 degree rotation. These are all perpendicular to each other. That's right, it's a vector coming out, right, of the board. I guess I could write, there's another way of drawing it, like a circle with a dot in the middle, but yeah. But this is, I think, clear enough. It's just, you can think of a three-dimensional axis, x, y, z. So E hat parallel is a component of E hat along the magnetic field. E hat perpendicular is a component perpendicular to the magnetic field, and E hat cross is just 90 degree rotation So these have the same amplitude. You have perf has the same amplitude as E hat cross. Just rotated by 90 degrees. Now, so the point is that this is just a, describing, this is just a convenient coordinate system when you're solving that vector equation, because the direction of magnetic field is different from the other directions. So you can just use a coordinate system in which magnetic field is in z direction, for example, and then write that equation. That's how you can get this solution. You can just write this equation in that coordinate system, and what you find is you find a solution basically for V in terms of E, but then that solution would have three components. There would have a component along the magnetic field, and we have components perpendicular to the magnetic field. There would be two components perpendicular to the magnetic field, and this is the way to write it down. Okay. So this is just the solution. Now, what are these omegas? There's actually one omega here. So these are the definitions. This is E hat perp. This is E hat cross. And this is E hat parallel. And there is omega is just the cyclotron frequency, right? Or I guess Larmor frequency, which is QA B naught divided by ME or MAC. So this is something that should look familiar to you, right? So why should it look familiar? We know what happens, like if you put electron in some external magnetic field, then what happens is, well, let's see. Okay, if you have an external electric and magnetic field, right? What happens if, say, you have an external electric field, E, external magnetic field? So what does the electron do? You know? You should know, yeah. It's a spiral. So with the magnetic field is a spiral. So what does the electric field do? No, if it's electric field, it's perpendicular to magnetic field, right? So if it was just magnetic field, it would just go around, or it might move along the magnetic field, but it would just spiral around. So what does the electric field do? You think so? No, that's not right. So we can look here. What happens if omega goes to zero? Let me see whether I can find it here. Is this, first of all, is this dimensionally correct? It should be dimensionally correct, right? Okay, yeah. So what happens if omega goes to zero? There would be, right. Right, so this thing, if omega goes to zero, so that would be a constant electric field. This goes to zero. This denominator also goes to zero. Oh, yeah, good, good. I think I.
If omega goes to zero, not to omega to n.
Right?
So in that case,
your leading coefficient is zero, and the denominator is not zero. So everything
The only thing that's going to disappear is omega perpendicular.
Well, you also have omega in front, so
if omega goes to zero, this guy cancels. Oh, there's a 1 over omega times E hat parallel, and there's a 1 over omega. Oh, no, this guy goes to becomes a constant.
Yeah.
E cross becomes a constant. This goes to infinity, right? Okay, so in this example, so that makes sense, right? So if there's a component of electric field along magnetic field, then of course you have acceleration. So it kind of keeps getting larger, velocity gets larger and larger. So that explains why this diverges. This theorem goes to zero, right, if omega goes to zero. So that doesn't matter for a constant electric field. And this is the term that gives you, becomes a constant as omega goes to zero, right? Because there's a 1 over omega and omega here. And that tells you that you have a constant velocity in the direction that's perpendicular to electric field and magnetic field, right? So that's E cross, right? That's the direction that both perpendicular to the electric field and magnetic field. So then this is something that you should remember, that what electron does is it would just move perpendicular to electric and magnetic field, right? So that's the interpretation of this term, at least when omega goes to zero, that would be for constant electric field. Okay, so, but in general, for any frequency, you have this, this would be the solution. From this, you can read off epsilons, right? In this diagram. So here I assume there is no E parallel. If there is E parallel, you would have constant acceleration in this direction, and which explains why this diverges when omega goes to zero. Right. Okay. Good. So this is, now from this, I can read off the epsilons, right? Because epsilon was defined as somewhere here. This was the definition of epsilon. Like, I guess these two equations define epsilon. Right, I have to just divide epsilon minus one is just, was just 4 pi times p hat, and p hat is j hat divided by minus I omega, right? So epsilon is this, this is the definition of epsilon, right? This is a permittivity tensor. So epsilon minus 1 divided by 4 pi times E is P. So let me just write it down. So this is the definition of epsilon. It's epsilon minus 1 is just 4 pi P hat, which is J hat divided by I omega minus I omega. And there's a, that's it, right? Or times E hat. So epsilon, remember what epsilon was. So epsilon was, we defined this D, which I don't remember its displacement vector, which was epsilon E, which is electric field plus 4 pi is polarizability. So this was the definition of epsilon. And I mean, this is what you would remember from, I mean, from undergrad ENM, right? Right. That basically. That's right. That's right. So in the vacuum, you had this epsilon naught, right? If it's. Right, that's for magnetic, right, for the magnetized medium. That you could also calculate, right. Right. Well, yeah, so epsilon times mu is like 1 over speed of light squared, right. Yeah, right. There would be a speed of light would be different from in material is different, right? No, so you do have a mu as well. I don't think I'm going to talk about mu anywhere in this course, but I mean these would be all related to each other because if you have a speed of propagation and you have epsilon, you can define a mu. So I think they would be all related to each other. I'm not defining it here. So that would depend on the magnetization of the medium. I think I'm actually thinking that that's usually a small effect in plasmas. Yeah, and I'm trying, I'm not 100%. I think it has to do with the fact that it depends on the internal spins, and they are usually much smaller than, I mean, the external angular momenta. But yeah, that's a good question. Generally, there would be a mu as well. I think that's usually very small. I haven't thought about that, but that's a good question. Well, right. Right. No, so you have to be careful. So there are two. There is a SI convention and there's CGS. We've been using in this course. We have been using CGS, and in CGS units, epsilon and mu are one in vacuum. So right. So it's a convenient choice of units so that you don't have to carry around that epsilon and mu, which is equivalent to using a different unit for charge. Instead of using coulomb, you're using basically some other unit called ESU, which is basically, its role is to make epsilon and makes epsilon and mu one in vacuum. Right.
Yeah, but the question starts with plasma, right. Magnetic energy, field.
Right.
That's why we ask where it's not there. It's not vacuum.
That's true.
So probably the properties of both parameters
vary. Right. Yeah. No. It does. I agree with you. It just never thought about mu of plasmas. So let me think about that. I think it's not important or it's something trivial. So let me think that that's why I haven't heard about it. But it's a very good question about what's happening to the mu here. But anyway, so epsilon is defined in this way. It has to do with the current, and as I said, it has to do with polarizability. But you can for periodic waves or harmonic waves, you can relate it to the current because just P dot is J. And so this was the definition. Now that we have this extra structure in your velocities. So you can just relate, you can read off epsilon just from this equation, and the definition of current. So the definition of current is what? It's just J is sum over the species, n bar of A, I guess E, QA, VA. So this is the definition of current, right? So just summing over all the species, multiply the charge density by the velocity. Right? Does that make sense? This could be in real or Fourier space. It doesn't matter. Because it's just a linear combination of V's. So I can unplug this in, plug V's in here. That gives me current. And then from this equation, read off epsilon.
Mm-hmm. For the case where magnetic field is zero, we consider that the electric field and magnetic field in the background were zero.
That's right.
So the electric field is actually the electric field generated by
perturbations. Exactly. Which is still the case here.
Yeah, but not for the magnetic
field. Exactly. The magnetic field is there's a background magnetic field here.
So maybe that's the difference.
Right, absolutely. Exactly. That's the difference. That's why we have this extra structure. We have, right. So we have three epsilons now, it turns out. So I'm going to write it down for you. Absolutely. So that's the difference. And then we have three epsilons now. So they have epsilon perpendicular, which is 1 minus omega p E squared divided by omega squared minus omega b E squared. Now where did I get omega p E? I'm going to come back to this. Okay. So this is epsilon parallel epsilon, this is epsilon perpendicular, epsilon parallel is 1 minus omega PE. So I is ion and E is electron. And these are the plasma frequencies. And then there is epsilon cross now, which is omega BE squared, omega PE squared, divided by omega squared minus PE squared minus omega BI squared, omega PI squared. So this doesn't have a squared. And there's omega. So how did I get, and it's omega PA. So I guess here I had defined omega BA, omega Ps, PAs, they're just plasma frequencies. 4 pi n bar A, QA squared divided by MA. So this is what we had defined before. So how did we get these? So these guys came from this combination. So when you write J in terms of V's, right? So you have epsilon minus 1 is 4 pi J, which is number density times Q, right? And then, of course, V has a 1 over MA in it. So this equation, when you write it in terms of epsilon minus E, 1 times E, the coefficient in front of this structure is omega, the plasma frequency. Because there is a number density times Q squared. There's Q here. There is another Q here. And then there's 1 over M. So that's how you get the plasma frequency. Yes?
The S on X, the first term,
Right. That's true. Absolutely. Okay. Good. So these have the right dimensions now. And right. And now we see, so in the limit of omega B is going to zero, if the magnetic field goes to zero, you get all the special relations that we had up there. This guy goes to zero, there is no epsilon cross, and these two become the same. They just become there I only wrote it for electron. So this would be for electron plus ion. Of course, for ion, omega pi is a smaller because mass of ions are bigger, so that's a small effect for ions.
If they had several ions available,
it would be just summing over these, right?
So you just add additional terms, or would it go all into one?
Right. So you would add additional terms here, but then you have to here there would be different signs because this is linear in omega b. So if this is positive for electron, but then negative for ions. Good. Okay. So this is just this is just solving these equations that I wrote here, and there are three different. So there's this preferred basis about three different components, and epsilons will be different in those three different directions. Okay. Now notice now that the difference between this is different from longitudinal transfers. Longitudinal transfers were defined with respect to the direction of propagation, wave vector. These are defined with respect to the magnetic field. Right? So this, you shouldn't confuse this as transfers or longitudinal. And what it's telling you is there are essentially three different, right? So if you have a wave that propagates in a magnetized medium or magnetized plasma, the dispersion relation would be anisotropic. There would be different speeds of propagation in depending on the polarization of your wave and how the polarization, the angle of polarization with respect to the magnetic field. Okay. So that's the meaning of this. So let's do, so this is just to be clear about the definitions of these. I think there's an extra I here. So D is epsilon parallel times E parallel, or I guess it could be D hat, plus epsilon perpendicular, E hat perpendicular, plus I epsilon cross, E hat cross. All right, so, this is just a definition. And for some reason, there is an extra I. No, I guess there is an extra I here, is that there is an extra I here. So that's the same I. So this is I here, so that these are all real. Okay. And yeah, so all this is exactly, so if your question is, if you ask, you have an electric field in a medium, how does it polarize the medium? Turns out that in this case for plasma, it polarizes differently in different directions depending on basically the angle with respect to the magnetic field. Oh yeah, right, right. Sorry, you're right. Absolutely. Thank you.
Why is epsilon x imaginary?
Well, epsilon x is real. But I mean, there is an and there is an I here, so that epsilon x is real. Right? So, otherwise, I could have. I mean, it's a choice of definition. Right? This, so I define it in a way that there's an I here, but the consequence is that epsilon cross is real. Okay. So so you can now plug this in. In Maxwell's equations, and I think we did something similar to this last time. So you get, divergence of epsilon E should be zero, and then you also get Laplacian of E minus gradient of divergence of E should be epsilon divided by CS squared E double dot. So these two equations gives you the dispersion relation along some arbitrary direction. You have to solve these two simultaneously. And like here, you cannot set divergence of E equal to zero because unlike a vacuum, it's divergence of epsilon times E that's zero. And so these two are not the same, right? Because epsilon is an anisotropic tensor. So we can do some simple cases. The whole thing is straightforward to apply because these are just linear algebra, linear equations. But we can do some simple cases. So the simple case I'm going to do here, which is I guess goes again to answer what Sosan was asking. I mean, why does it matter for astrophysics? Is propagation of is a so-called Faraday rotation, which is how we measure magnetic field in magnetized or in astrophysical, for astrophysical sources. So for this, let's assume that, look at the simplified case. If k, the wave number for propagation is parallel to B naught. So in this case, in fact, transverse and longitudinal are the same as perpendicular and parallel. Although I guess transverse, both of these are both of these guys would be transverse because both of them are perpendicular to the magnetic field, and if magnetic field is along the wave vector, then both are perpendicular to the wave vector. So, and the point is that now, because magnetic field breaks rotational symmetry, these are not the same. So the transfer, there are different transverse propagation properties. So what happens then, the equations that you have is, so I'm going to write these Maxwell's equation in Fourier space. So divergence of epsilon. Okay, let's see. Divergence of epsilon times E is zero. So this tells me that k dot. Let's see. Epsilon parallel times E parallel, let's see, should be equal to zero. Oh, you mean, right, this is the vector, right, good, that's true. So, right, I only have E parallel, there is no E perpendicular. No, actually, no, let's see, is that true? There is, right, so there is E hat perpendicular, but the, I mean, these guys don't matter. E hat perpendicular and E hat cross don't matter because they would be perpendicular to K, because they're perpendicular to B now, they will be perpendicular to K, so they don't matter. So the only thing is just this E hat parallel would be zero because, let's see, is that, so it just says that E hat parallel is zero. This is all that says. So you just have transverse components of magnetic field in this simple case, right? The next equation is the propagation equation, k squared c squared minus epsilon perpendicular omega squared e is I epsilon cross omega squared e cross or e hat cross. This is E hat. Okay, so can we see where this comes from? So K squared C squared, that's the first term. Gradient of divergence of E, that's I think that's zero because there is no E hat parallel, right? Okay, so K dot E is zero. So you have this term, epsilon times E, the double dot. So the double dot becomes omega squared or minus omega squared, but then epsilon times E has two components now, this guy and this guy. And these are the two components, right? Now I'm a bit, let's, I think if I want to write it more clearly, then it should be, Is this correct? Right, no, that is true, right. No, so I think one thing to have in mind is that my notation is a bit confusing. E hat is just, E hat is E perpendicular plus E parallel. Right. And this is not a component of E hat, right? So it's just rotation of this by 90 degrees. And I just argued this is zero, so E hat is just E hat perpendicular. That's all there is to it, okay? So if you imagine that propagation in the Z is in the Z direction, you can define, so let's say K is KZ, that around J hat, oh, I don't know, whatever. That says it's 0, 0, and KZ. Then you can define this E hat plus or minus as E hat X plus or minus I E hat Y, right? And what you find is, in fact, you could write down, so this is a vector equation now. Is that true? This is a vector equation. It's a bit peculiar vector equation, if you ask me. Sorry, what is that? Right. These are confusing. So let me, I don't know what to, yeah, so let me just make this X more like X. Sorry about that, yeah. This is cross and this is X, so.
So X and Y are
perpendicular. Exactly, it's perpendicular to the direction of propagation. And I'm a bit confused about how this equation can be satisfied given that these two guys are perpendicular to each other. So So what am I doing wrong? I'm missing something. Right. How this appears.
Yeah.
So what you have is we need epsilon e here.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, this is epsilon e. This is the definition of epsilon e. Right? So it has three components. And one of our grid is zero. Is the parallel one is zero. So there are these two guys that are left. Well, so epsilon e, right, so the double dot is just an omega square. So epsilon e would be just this sum. Okay? I see what's going on. Right, so the Laplacian of e is just, Laplacian of e is a vector which is just k squared times e, and this other guy though is this guy, yeah. This guy is just epsilon times e. That would be epsilon per omega squared e hat plus this guy basically, epsilon cross omega squared e hat. Cross. Okay, so let me see. I think I'm a bit confused by what I've written here, but let me just write down what I get at the end. So with this decomposition, what I get is k squared c squared minus epsilon perp omega squared times e hat plus or minus is becomes I e to the plus or minus I pi over 2. And this is just plus or minus I, really, times e hat plus or minus times epsilon cross omega squared. And this gives you different, depending on if I just plug in here, what should I do? This is what happens if you're not careful. And from that I can solve. I can actually get this dispersion relation for different for e hat plus and e hat minus. So the dispersion relation is just omega squared becomes, omega squared, or let's this way, k plus, or k squared, c squared is epsilon perpendicular plus or minus epsilon cross omega squared. Okay, so let's see whether I'm doing something that sounds nonsensible. So in other words, there is a propagation speed, v plus or minus, which is defined as omega squared divided by k squared, which is c squared divided by epsilon perpendicular plus or minus epsilon cross. So there are two different modes, e hat x plus i e hat y and e hat x minus e hat y. And this would be basically what we call linear polarization, right? Linear. Because if you have a mode which is e to the I omega t, you can see that this combination that with the plus would be, counterclockwise, and with the minus it would be counterclockwise. pluses would be counterclockwise, yeah, right. And minus would be clockwise, I guess. All right. Is that clear? It's supposed to be clear. If it's not, then we should think about it. See what we're doing. Right. So, I mean, if you have something that's going, okay, good, good. So if you have something that's cosine of omega t, if e, this is cosine of omega t and this is sine of omega t, then there's sum to give e to the I omega t, and that would be counterclockwise, right? So that one, that would be the circular polarization in one direction. If there's minus, they give the e to the minus I omega t in the opposite. That would be in the other opposite direction. Yes. Right.
To plug in and get plus minus.
Right, no, I'm not 100% clear on that either. So I think there's something I'm a bit confused about because it seems that this should give 0 equal to 0 or something like that, which is which doesn't make sense. Because these vectors are in perpendicular directions. So I'm a bit confused about what I've done here. But in principle, we should be able, all I've done in my notes is just to plug into that equation.
Mm-hmm. Is that somehow rotating our system, and that's what we're getting from one to the other? Because you don't have it in the first equation, but it pops up in the last.
From here to here, yeah. Right.
So maybe that's what's doing the half or like quarter
right.
rotation in either direction.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can say we perpendicular equals the exponential of I over 2 cross.
Yeah, no, I don't see that either. So I mean, it's a little bit weird, but okay. So those equations I think are correct. So the first one, these equations, the first one just tells you that E parallel is zero. So I think that's fine. This guy, connects. So that this is the whole story. So somehow this should tell us what this Bergeron relation is.
I think the EX plus cosine I EY, I think you can express that. As a complex exponential, right? By some angle.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somehow there has to be like a rotation matrix that is coming out of that that's E to the
I. Yeah, somehow it should do that. Yeah.
Well, where is the imaginary direction that?
Yeah.
I guess you have to relate the x direction through the x and y directions to parallel.
Mm-hmm.
I guess another way to look at this is not even considering the equations. What do we expect the behavior to be?
Well, so this is the story, and this should come out. I often manage to confuse myself. So the story here is that you have two circular polarizations, and they have different speeds. And what happens is that if you go through the magnetized medium, then they would propagate with different speeds. So you get So a linear polarization, which would be linear superposition of two circular polarization, is going to change as you propagate through the medium. So that's the ordinary story. And
so the magnetization acts like a
That's right. So this gives you get something like integral from 0 to L. Between k plus and k minus, I mean, for a fixed omega, there will be two different k's from v plus and v minus, which from the formula we have for this, for that epsilon cross, which is proportional to the magnetic field, you get something that looks like 2 pi e cubed divided by m e C squared omega squared. And then you have integral of number density of electrons, magnetic field along the line of propagation, or line of sight, and then dz. So this is called the rotation measure. So remember, we talked about dispersion measure, which was just the integral of NE. That came from observation of the frequency dependence of the time of arrival. Now, if you have magnetic field, then there's something funny happens to the polarization angle, which is basically this is the line of sight integral of this velocity difference. Yeah, no, no, the scattering, this depends on magnetic field. I don't think, I don't know, not that I know of. I think a scattering measure is yet another thing. Right, the difference in K is, in fact, if you, for a fixed frequency, then there would be two different k's, that means two different speeds. And right, so what it does is just says that if you have linear polarization that comes in with what angle, that angle is going to rotate because what happens is there will be different phases for E plus and E minus.
So is it that their propagation speeds are the same, but their phase changes are different? Or is the propagation
The propagation speeds are different, right? Right. So what happens is, for a fixed omega, there will be two k's. So a linear polarization, so it's ex and ey, would have two. You can decompose it into circular polarized, left-handed and right-handed. But then now they're not moving at the same speed. So the left-handed would go as e to the I. K plus X, or K plus Z, and the right-handed would be going as e to the IK minus Z in the opposite direction, of course. So this case is different. So so if their sum used to be in this direction after some amount of propagation, the sum of these would be in another direction because these k's aren't the same. So that's the idea. And it's something like, so in terms of radians, this is something like 0.8 lambda divided by 100 centimeter squared. And then this rotation measure, which is what we have up there, divided by centimeter to the minus 3, which is a typical density, times microgauss. Times parsec. And this lambda is the wavelength. So this is wavelength. So 100 centimeter, 1 meter wavelength is some type of typical radio wavelength. And you can get of order one radian more rotation for a typical density of magnetic field, the density of ISM, interstellar medium, which is a square centimeter, sorry, one per cubic centimeter. Typical magnetic field of microgauss and the typical length is parsec. Of course, this obviously changes. So if your rotation measure is too big, you cannot measure it. I mean, the important thing is that there's a 1 over, like dispersion measure, there's a 1 over omega squared dependence, right? So you get, with basically what you see, you look at polarization and you see the angle changes as you look at different frequencies. But if it changes too fast, then you're not going to see any polarization, right? Because you can never, as I was saying, you never make an observation at one frequency. You always have some frequency range. And in that frequency range, if it changes too fast, then basically on average, you don't have any polarization. Right? Good. So this is how you can, so this is an astrophysical application of plasmas. So let me see. So I'm doing. Exactly right. And in fact, so dispersion measure and rotation measure, if you combine them, you can get basically both density and magnetic field. course, in some average sense, right? Yeah. Right. So you don't get line of sight average. So it's electron density weighted average of the magnetic field along the line of sight. So the actual magnetic field could be bigger, right? And I mean, this is how we get typical the scale of micrographs for interstellar magnetic field. So okay, so I'm falling farther behind for some reason. So I guess now we are 1.5 lectures behind the schedule. You need to use one of the Fridays. Okay, so if we can do all the assignments very quickly, then maybe we could somehow make up for it. Or maybe if I'm a bit less confused about some of this stuff. But yeah, so some I'm not. So I guess one thing I have to figure out is what went on from here to here, because it seems I'm missing. I don't quite understand what this equation means. Right, because it seems that these are perpendicular to each other, E hat and E hat cross. So it just is. But no, that's what I was saying. E cross is not a component of E hat. It's perpendicular to the E hat, perpendicular, right? So this was the idea. So E hat, it has the component of E hat parallel, E hat perpendicular, and E hat cross was perpendicular to this plane, right? So. Right. E perp is basically E hat minus E hat parallel is the E hat perp.
Oh, so you're projecting it onto the other.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So if there's no E parallel, then
E hat perp is just E hat. The two are the same. So that's what I was saying, right?
I still don't understand why we have three electric field vectors. Can't we just project them all down on the
no, but E breaks symmetry.
Right. So this is not a component of E hat. This is just something that's made out of basically E hat and B. This is a direction. E hat cross is just a direction defined by this is perpendicular to E hat and B naught, and its magnitude is the same as E hat perp. But that's why we need it, right? Okay, so sorry, I think I'm screwing something up trivial, but we're not going to resolve it now, so we're going to resolve it next week, and hopefully we're going to try to figure out a way to make up for all the last lectures last time. Thank you, guys.